This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. It's Dave Wyman and Mike Lefko. And right now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, we have Mariners slugger Mike Ford. Mike, how you doing, man?
Hey, thanks for having me. Doing good.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for being on. And just tell us about the road trip. You got a nice day off. I'm assuming after you played Texas, you flew right to San Diego so you could have your day off in San Diego instead of Texas. Or how has that gone?
Oh, it was great. You know, I just kind of get a day to regroup. And, you know, obviously San Diego's pretty nice weather. So it was nice to be here and just have a day, you know, kind of view the city and see different things and get ready to go for the series.
Mike, what's it like being back with the Mariners after a couple of stints last year? And now you're back with this team. Is it starting to feel very familiar here?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, a draw to come back here, you know, being comfortable, you know, knowing the staff, front office, and guys here. It's a great group of guys. So, you know, obviously, you know, you factor that in, signing in the offseason, you know, with it being a minor league deal. And, you know, the great 2 months down in Tacoma, felt like I got myself right again. You know, got myself confident again. It was nice to have a good run of the bats. And, you know, now ready to go up here and see what I can do. Just try to enjoy it.
Mike, can you kind of put into words or be a little more specific about, you know, getting yourself right? And is there just a couple of things that click, or do you have like a system where, you know, when you're trying to get back on track, what was it for you that clicked for you this time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look at last year as a whole, there's a lot of movement. You know, 8 different teams in a year is pretty tough to get comfortable anywhere. But, you know, even kind of extended back further, 2020 and 2021, just some things in my swing just kind of weren't clicking. They would be there at times and kind of leave, and it was tough to replicate. But, you know, for me in the off season, it was just kind of like, all right, we're gonna make the change back and cement it and finally figured out how to do it again, which was, you know, kind of the biggest thing. You know, I knew the problem, but it was tough to get to the adjustment. You know, worked with some great people in the off season, you know, got help wherever I could and just kind of took notes on everything and, you know, formulated this thing to get back into my back hip and try to see the ball as long as I can, use all the fields and not look for one pitch in one spot, just be adjustable again, like 2019. And, you know, it's worked and, we're going to roll with it. It was nice to get a few, you know, a bunch of at bats in a row under my belt somewhere to kind of lock it in, which was nice. And then, you know, I feel comfortable. So, I feel like I'm ready to go this time and hopefully I can show that.
Well, Mike, who were some of the, give us some names of some of the guys that really helped you along the way.
There's a bunch within the game. I mean, I don't want to sell anyone short. I hit with a great guy in Tampa this offseason. His name's Addison Mariznick. He played in the minor leagues with New York. He owns a facility out there. And, you know, a bunch of the Yankees guys live down there. So, you know, Judgey being around really helped me this offseason. Just kind of getting back to finding something that I could preset my backside with, so that I could, you know, feel like I was on my backside again. And you know, it was small adjustments in the end, but it was a process of tooling with different drills, different things, putting my body into a position that feels comfortable, that doesn't. So it took a lot of work, but, you know, very happy with the results and, you know, it feels nice to feel like you can compete again and be good at this level. And, you know, obviously, 2 games into it, we don't know how it's going to go, but the feeling is very nice to have.
Mike, you mentioned it, all the movement you did, all the teams, all the up and down and new cities, new places to live and all that. And it's hard sometimes to think about that aspect of it because we're talking about baseball. But when that is kind of hanging around you, how are you able to balance, okay, when I'm here, I'm just playing baseball, although I might be trying to figure out where I'm living, where I'm moving next and all of that. Does that get to you a little bit? And how stressful was that last season?
Yeah, I mean, so from 2021 to the end of 2022, it was seven different organizations. And let's see, I think 12 different teams, AAA and big league. So, you know, it just kind of was the feeling of, you know, kind of always looking over your shoulder, you know, and it does, you know, as much as you can do to not let it affect you, obviously, it can get under your skin a little bit. You know, obviously, I'm a big believer in that results, you know, keep you in a certain place, and I didn't really have many. Obviously, it's tough to do, and, you know, it's kind of an inconsistent thing, but I think last year mainly just showed me go out and compete wherever you are, and, you know, that's all you can do in some of those spots. I mean, certain times I would have, you know, 8 days off, 10 days off at home, and then, you know, come up and play a big league game, you know. So it definitely tough to do, but definitely teaches you just to get out there and compete sometimes, which is an important skill to have.
Mike, you crushed one the other day, and this little punk with Travis Jankowski with the Rangers robs you. If something like that happens, do you have a conversation with him? Do you go over and say, hey, thanks a lot, buddy, or anything like that? Did you communicate with him?
I texted a few guys on that team that I know and have their numbers and just kind of said, tell Jankowski I really could have used that one. it's just a good feeling to be in a spot to feel like I can do that on a consistent basis again. And, you know, they'll come, and hopefully that's not the highlight, you know. Yeah, definitely, you know, sometimes when things are going that way, it happens. And I kind of feel like that whole series kind of went that way for us, and did a lot of good things, a lot of unlucky things, and, you know, there were some bad things, but that happens with baseball, and you know, yeah, luck turns, and we'll be fine, and just like I said, hopefully that's not the only one we're talking about at the end.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I was going to say, you probably know guys on every team, right, with all the organizations you've been in. Have you found that, okay, you know pretty much guys on a lot of these teams around baseball?
Yeah, I mean, with all the movement, for sure, you know, a lot of other guys, you know, have moved too. So just kind of you find your network kind of spread out the more you stay within the game. So, yeah, there's always a good buddy or two on each team. Always nice to see them, talk to them, and, you know, kind of have a comfortable face around when you're traveling different things. I think me and Kevin Padlo have followed each other for a while now. So that always seems like a guy that, you know, somehow we're playing against one another or playing with one another. Just a lot of great people around the sport. So the more time you're there, the bigger the network gets.
Yeah, you mentioned it, Mike. So Yankees, Giants, Mariners, Braves, Angels, back to the Mariners. Is there something about, you know, the culture and the experience with the Mariners? We talk to one or two, three players a week, and we always remark that it's such a good group of guys, man. Everybody is just, you know, it's just been really fun getting to know all you guys. Is there anything about having been on all those other teams that stands out to you about the culture and just the way that the Mariner organization is run?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, each spot has its good and has its, you know, bad, like anything in life. You know, this is it's a very special group of players that, you know, you can be the 26th guy on the roster, or the number one guy on the roster, and they make you feel comfortable. It's an easy atmosphere to be around, and that's really important, you know, to me at this point with how much movement's kind of gone on. Some places aren't like that. Some places, you know, are similar. I'm just not as comfortable there. But, you know, it's just a great group of individuals. And, you know, the guys that they bring in, you know, in the new year, like, you know, different from last year, all great too. And I think that's a big quality and a huge plus. It makes the locker room a lot of fun to be in, and the guys a lot of fun to be around.
Yeah, I know you were just here, but like you said, there are a lot of young guys and some new guys on this team. Did you have to make some introductions when you got up there and say, oh, I don't really know you yet?
Yeah, I mean, you know, spring training helps. That month, you kind of get close with guys to, you know, even when you're on the minor league deal, you know, you're still around and everything. So definitely, you know, get to know some people better. But it kind of just carried over from spring training. Obviously been some injuries and stuff and some younger guys that I hadn't really gotten to know, especially on the pitching side, just because you're not around them as much. But, you know, can't say a bad word about anyone. It's a great group and, you know, just really enjoyable to be around.
All right, Mike. So those of us that watch, you know, baseball movies like Bull Durham and stuff, I'm always curious about when you're going from the minors to up to the big leagues. What's the biggest difference? You know, we always talk about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and, you know, Best Western versus the Hyatt and, you know, steak and lobster. Is that what's the biggest difference going up and down when you get moved up to the big league?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. We actually had this talk in AAA a few days before I came up. What was more different off the field or on the field in the big leagues? And you know, each portion has its differences. Obviously, it's a step up here in both facets. I guess that we were talking about the biggest difference, whether it's off the field or on the field. And you know, on the field, just the level of play, defenses make the field look a lot smaller. You know, pitchers are dialed in on the edges a lot more. And just kind of the overall pace of the game is different. Obviously, I think, you know, if you just watch a game, you can see that. But off the field, yeah, I mean, it's the hotels are a little better for sure. That's very enjoyable when you get those hotels. A little different than, you know, a Holiday Inn somewhere. You know, you just got to kind of keep your mindset about, you know, my big thing is like, just remember where you came from and don't, you know, just keep everything the same and try to be the same guy. And, you know, and that's important. And I think that's what makes this group so special too. That's kind of how everyone is here.
Hey, Mike, I know it wasn't the ideal situation and that's why you had to come in and pitch, but you got to go in and pitch, and did it bring back memories of those college days? Did it make you think, hey, I could do this? Or are you happy not being a pitcher anymore?
Yeah, I'm very happy not being a pitcher anymore. But, it's always, you know, like, it's always an enjoyable thing to do for me because, you know, there's no expectation on you. It's basically the only time within the game that there's never going to be an expectation on you. You can have fun with it. You know, you're getting blown out when it happens. So if it makes one person laugh and makes their day a little bit better, you know, that's kind of it's weird as it is to say, that's kind of the goal. It's to get off the mound as quick as possible and, you know, kind of lighten the mood a touch. So, you know, I'm comfortable doing it, but I'm definitely glad I don't have to do that daily anymore. You know, it's always fun to do, but, you know, hopefully not again for a while.
Now, are you just throwing straight fastballs, or are you throwing a little bit of junk, Mike? What do you got?
Oh, no, I just lob it now. I tried to pitch the first inning I ever threw in the big leagues. I tried to pitch, and that didn't go too well. body didn't feel too great the next day. So, it's I think 19 in New York, and I got some really hard balls hit off me. So I just said, you know what, I'm just going to lob it from now on, and I threw one breaking ball the last time just because I had a guy at two strikes try to get a strikeout, you know. But, I just lobbed the ball in.
Okay. So you're not trying to be a pitcher. You're just trying to play catch with the catcher, basically.
Try to get off the mound as quick as possible.
There you go. Hey, real quick, last one from me, Mike. When you're on the road, what's sort of your – do you go out and enjoy the local – you know, dining and things like that? Who are you hanging out with? What did you do on your day off there in San Diego?
Went to the zoo yesterday with my girlfriend. Wow. She's a big zoo lover, I guess. We try to see the city as much as we can, just kind of go around. I used to kind of be the sleep in and not do much type, but the older I've gotten, the more I like to explore the city and kind of try new spots to eat, see different things in each city. So, kind of get up early, get a coffee, walk down to, you know, a local shop or whatever, get some lunch, do an activity, and then, you know, kind of have a dinner somewhere. Just enjoy the day, relax.
Sounds like you're like me. Like, my wife makes me get off my tail and do lots of things. Otherwise, I would just sit around and watch TV. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, she forces me to do something.
Yeah. Well, Mike,
my choice, but it makes me better.
Yeah, good deal. Well, enjoy it down in San Diego. We really appreciate it. It was great getting to know you. Hope to see you in person up here sometime, and good luck the rest of the way, Mike.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, guys.
I appreciate it.
Thanks,
you.
Mike.
There goes Mike Ford. I forgot about him having to go up there and pitch. What was the stat that they had? I think it was that the Texas Rangers have not had to have a position. They're one of like eight teams that have not had a position player come in and pitch because a game had gotten out of hand. And or maybe there was also something. If you remember this stat, text it in. Because I think, and maybe it was opponents that had the number of position players thrown, because they're putting up, what did that I say yesterday? They had 16 games over
of at least double-digit runs.
10
yeah.
runs.
You know what? You don't see it much. Theoretically, you could. If you were blowing out someone like that, why not have a position player pitch? I guess because it's baseball and people get very offended, I think a team would see it as taunting them.
Yeah.
You know, if you're up 16-3, why not bring a position player out there, have him pitch the eighth or ninth inning?
It's a great question.
Don't see that much.
Well, and also, why would the other team get mad? You know, like, hey, look.
Oh, I could see them taking it as like a taunt.
Yeah,
like, oh, we're shoving it in your face.
You go to the other guy and say, hey, look, man, this is no disrespect. It's just that this game is out of hand. It could have gone either way. We want to save our arms.
I know. I think they should. See, that's what I was going to say. Sometimes, for Mike Ford, maybe he can get into a game this year when the Mariners are up by like 12 runs in the last inning. You don't want to waste a bullpen arm. Bring a position player out. Bring out more position players when teams are getting blown out on the winning side. So that's my push. But because it's baseball and we've seen the minor things that teams get offended about, I doubt that will ever happen. It should, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. We had that topic last week. About as far as putting it in somebody's face, it was the Houston Astros.
Yeah, well, that's what I was like. Because if they got offended by like the slide, which seems so innocent.
Abreu, you know, look, it had been 53 games. He finally hits a home run, and so then he runs around the bases, slides. It was obnoxious, but I just don't think that warrants somebody, you know, beaning your player. It's ridiculous. By the way, the Mike Ford interview you just heard, the Mariner Player Spotlight, is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino and Pacific Lamp and Supply. Really good getting to know Mike Ford. Just seems like a nice, gentle soul, doesn't
he? The Mariners lineup is out, by the way. Came out about 10 minutes ago. Tweeted out by Shannon Dreher. He's in the lineup, Mike Ford. He's the DH, batting eighth. No Dylan Moore. I was looking for that quickly. Good news, though, J.P. Crawford is back. So he is the leadoff man. He is playing shortstop. He's batting first. Julio up to second. A little flip there. Julio second. Ty Francis third. Kelnick hitting fourth. Teoscar Hernandez batting fifth, playing in right field. Cal Raleigh batting sixth. He's catching. Suarez hitting seventh. And we mentioned Mike Ford batting eighth. Colton Wong batting ninth against the right-hander, Joe Musgrove. So there we go.
There you go.
What do we think? Yeah.
I'm hoping.
Good to see J.P. Crawford back.
What's that?
Good to see J.P. Crawford back.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll be very curious. Not so much this one. I know it's their natural rival, the San Diego Padres. But, I guess it'll be somewhat of a barometer. But to me, I think the more meaningful series certainly is going to be the Angels, see what happens there. Also, it's not like Texas is just not crushing everybody. I mean, their offense right now is ridiculous. Who'd they take down last night? St. Louis?
Walk-off, right? Against the Cardinals.
Yeah. So, yes, however you feel about the Mariners and however you felt about them last year at about this time, it felt like there was lots of complaining and that we weren't too excited about it. Yeah. You get any other news, Mike? You around baseball? A couple of things
looks
happening
like,
while we wait for Jaron
Reed. I would say it looks like more probably 3:30 for Jaron Reed. But a lot happening around baseball. Dave, I think you kind of mentioned this unintentionally, or did you know that this was going to happen, that the A's public funding fell through? And you brought that up yesterday. And I was like, no, they've settled on a site. They're good there. But the Nevada State Legislature said, no, we're not funding that. So plan B, I guess, for the A's. Either they're going to have to pony up more money or figure out something else, because right now they are not getting the public funding that they're going to ask for in Las Vegas. So seemed to be certain. They came out with renderings. They said, we're moving to Vegas, and now they might not have the money. What an embarrassing little moment here for the A's, because they're getting kicked out of their lease after next season in 2024. They already were going to need somewhere to play in 2025 and 2026. The original proposals had this Vegas stadium being ready by 2027, but now they don't even have the public funding as of yet.
Well, it just, I guess maybe subliminally, I heard something like a rumor or whatever, but they're the team in Major League Baseball that is like what the Washington franchise, the Commanders, have been about. You know, they find a way to screw things up. And yeah, I guess it doesn't surprise me too much, but and they're going to get kicked out of their own crappy stadium. I feel like the rest of the owners are probably like, hey, why don't you spend some money out there, right? I mean, that part's kind of embarrassing. And then you look at the fact that they just don't spend any money. Now, I loved the whole concept of Moneyball. I feel like that has kept them alive for a lot in Major League Baseball. But it just, to me, if you were going to ask me who was a team that was going to screw something like that up, because, you know, Vegas is just the natural spot. They talk about NBA expansion now. You know, they got the Raiders there. Isn't Tom Brady, isn't there going to be a WNBA team that he is part of?
Well, I know he's going to be a minority owner for the Raiders, I think. Is he part of the WNBA there? There is a WNBA team there as well. So
yeah. So I thought he was going to be part of that. I feel like that's just the natural landing spot for teams like that. And there's lots and lots of people moving to Vegas right now. Apparently, the housing market is just exploding there, and you know, you could get pretty nice amount of square footage and nice houses for, you know, it's not as expensive as places like on the left coast. So, you know, lots of people moving there. So it would just be so much nicer for them there from what they have in Oakland and the pathetically low amount of fans, and the facilities there are just horrible.
Yeah. It's I'm looking through the exact numbers here. Asking the original thing here, they're asking the public for slightly over $380 million in public funding. And this contrasts sharply with the Bills, who just announced plans for a new stadium. And the public is contributing like $850 million for that out of $1.54 billion. So Buffalo fans, clearly insane. They love their football there. They'll do anything to keep them. But in Vegas, they're like, nah, we don't really want the A's. If they come and they spend the money, sure, but we don't want to pay for the A's. Yeah. So a funny contrast there.
All right, well, let's get to the break. We're going to have Jarek Reed, who one of the Seahawks draft choices, rookie who looks really good out there. Really liked what we've heard from him. He's coming up next. This is Wyman and Bob with Mike Lefko.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. It's Dave Wyman and Mike Lefko. And here in the studio, the Cortez Kennedy Memorial Studio, we have Jarek Reed. He was a sixth-round pick out of New Mexico. Jarek, welcome to Seattle, man.
Man, I appreciate you guys having me on the show. Glad to be here. Yeah. It's an honor.
Thank you.
Well, it's an honor.
Your favorite player already.
Yeah, already. Love him. Hey, I saw this was really funny. So we've been talking to John Schneider all week, you know, every week. And then, you know, we got together a couple of times and he talked about you being angry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's my kind of guy, because you should be pissed off when you play football, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not off the field, but
you're a nice guy.
But exactly, and that's how you do it. Is that just come natural, or is that something you like build yourself into kind of a frenzy on game day?
You got to build. I build myself up because, like you said, off the field, I'm a great guy, friendly guy. You know, I like to be out in the crowd with the people, just being a normal guy. You know, but once I'm inside this building, and once I'm on that football field, a switch has to get flipped, and you got to become that player that the team needs, and then you have to be great at this game, and so. It's funny that I told somebody this before. It's funny he called me the angry elf. I feel like that's going to be like a trademark now while I'm my time here in Seattle. But it does speak about my personality on the field.
Do you know the movie line that comes from?
Isn't it it's the Christmas movie, Elf?
Elf.
Yeah, Elf, yeah.
Yeah. So, and you're taller than John.
Yeah, about a couple inches.
Yeah,
couple
is that what you told him when he said that to you?
No, you know he signed my contract. You
know? Once you get a contract, I love your. You know, you showed sense of humor because I was like, okay, the guys were real serious. Didn't really know what you were about, but then you looked very serious and said, "If he'd have said that to my face, there was going to be a problem." And I thought, "Oh, he's serious." And then you start laughing.
No. I know how to take a joke, and also, you know, that's the boss man. So even if I did feel the type of way, he wouldn't know.
Well, he loves you, man. He loves you.
Yeah. Nah, that's my guy, man. We've grown and built a connection since I've been here this past month now. You know, great guy. Like I said, I'm honored that he picked me of one of their 10 picks that we had, and just trying to take it, advantage of it day by day.
Have you had maybe like a welcome to the NFL moment yet when you're out there thinking, well, these are guys that maybe, I don't know if you played video games, you played Madden with some of these players against them, or you watched them growing up. When did it kind of sink in that you are a part of this, everything you kind of grew up watching?
I think it was the first day that we had like the full team with the vets in the indoor. We did a walkthrough. And so like when we were doing walkthroughs in the beginning, like with rookie mini camp, it was cool. It was fast tempo. But once Geno Smith, Tyler Lockett, Bobby Wagner, all those guys stepped on the field, and I'm out there with them, and the bullets are just flying. And like it took me a couple of days, a couple of practices to, you know, get with that pace. I feel like that first day was like my welcome to the league. Like I'm actually here. You know, obviously you got a 10th year Hall of Fame ballot, Bobby Wagner. You go, you got Geno Smith, which has got his big contract after a big year. You got Tyler Lockett, who's one of the greatest receivers in the game. You know, he's still playing. It's just being out there as a rookie, looking up to those guys, trying to get here and actually be on that field with them. That was my welcome to the NFL moment.
Yeah, well, and I just say, I don't want to say go easy on yourself, but don't put too much pressure because everybody goes through that. You know, and, you know, especially when you come back your second year, everything kind of slows down. But did you look at DK and go, damn, that's a wide receiver in this league?
The thing is, I had the opportunity to go, like, see him in high school. You know, we both from Mississippi. He's from Oxford. I'm from Olive Branch. So it's a 45-minute drive. So, you know, like, I don't think I played against him. I played against Oxford before. But, like, I've seen him live in action before seeing him now.
Yeah.
But just seeing him grow and still get bigger and actually still keep the speed while getting bigger and actually see him on that field, yeah, he's one of them ones. He's one of those guys for sure. And it's just like, yeah, you see why he's one of those top receivers in the league.
Yeah.
Speaking of Olive Branch, you know, there's a famous Seahawk from Olive Branch. Did you know
Jared
KJ
Green,
Wright?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
KJ.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that guy. Yeah. No, there will be two. There will be two famous Seahawks.
Second one. Yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you know him at all? Know the families at all?
I knew his family. So I didn't personally, I didn't know him. He was a way older than me. I know his story. I know that my older brother, when he was a freshman, KJ was just graduating and leaving. But I was really close with his cousin. His cousin, and so that's how me and his family got tied together. And so once I became a Seahawk, he was the first guy I reached out to, like, hey, man, I'm proud of, I'm following your footsteps. I would love to, you know, sit down, have lunch, and just pick your head about the game. And he hit me back instantly, like, yeah, what you doing Friday? And so I think 2 weeks ago, me and him went down to Bellevue, went to Joey's. We had a great lunch, and we talked for like 2 hours, great talk, and then randomly Cam Chancellor pulled up. You know, them guys, they're best friends. So like when he came, it was like, oh snap, like, I got best of both worlds here, two legends. And so it was just a great night. You know, they gave me a lot of knowledge and told me the exact same thing. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. You know, this is your first year, enjoy it, soak it in, learn. And then as the years go on, it begins to get slower and slower. Just enjoy this time. You know, it comes and goes. Just enjoy it.
Well, and Jarek, the other experience I had was if you're here in camp, you obviously kicked butt in college. Like, everything you did worked. So then you get into the NFL, and, like, the coaches are like, that's not going to work here. Like, little steps and things like that. Has there been any technical things that you've gone, like, I know for me, I was like, I've never even thought of that before. I just went and played, right? And now you've got to do all these little things. Is there anything in particular that in that regard that has stood out to you?
It's a lot of things. So, like, one thing that happened to me today, actually, was, like, the five-yard rule in the NFL. In college, we lined up 6-by-1 outside. We can get hands on a receiver when they release and just run with them. In the league, past 5 yards, you can't touch the receiver. Mm-hmm. And so it was a little slip up out there on Jackson Smith. He ran outside, and at the 5-yard mark, I put my hands on him. Not rough. He didn't get knocked down or anything like that, but that one little touch flag, you know. So it's stuff like that that going from college to NFL that you can't do anymore. So it's just now getting better feet.
Yeah.
And it's also like when you reading the flow of the ball, one false step to the left and the ball is going to the right, that's the difference of you making that play or you not making that play. And so it's just being more detailed, more technical, doing the same thing I did in college to get me to this point, but just becoming more fine with it. Yeah. And so that's just the threshold that I have to get over. I think I'm dealing with that right now. But like you said, you know, it's week four for me. So come time, come training camp, I'll be, you know, with training and just going day by day. I'll get where I need to be at before the season.
You're walking into a very loaded, very competitive secondary group there. Have you had a chance to talk to Quandre and Jamal, pick their brains, or even talk to some of the younger guys now, like Tariq Woolen or Mike Jackson, who have been here just a couple years, but who have been here and have kind of gone through it?
Yeah, it's very competitive. I mean, there's a whole building that's competitive, but in that one group, everybody is great. Obviously, we're all in the league, but, like, all those guys from All-Pro to Tariq Woolen being a rookie in the All-Pro, Kobe Bryant being one of the best nickels in the league, it's just everybody – it's good, but everybody is for each other. You know, those guys, it's never been a time where I ask a question, a guy don't want to answer me that question. Like, they take the time and explain this to me. When I got drafted, Quandre and Tariq was the first two people to hit my line. Like, hey, bro, congrats, let's work. It's going to be a great, great season, great time together. So everybody's cool. When Jamal came, he just came back this week. First thing he did was introduce himself, learn everybody's name, you know, give a speech. Like, all those guys are cool. There's no animosity, there's no pride, there's no I'm the big dog here. It's like we're all collectively one group, and we're just, I mean, the best man's gonna play, you know. It's just like that.
I got to imagine that Coach Larry, the special team coach, got to you right away, because I read you had something like 800 snaps teams.
It was crazy. I think I started special teams since my first day at New Mexico, and then like the last 2 years at New Mexico, our offense punted the ball the most times of any team in the country. So, like, I was on every single one of those punts. So, like, all those things add up. But, like, the first day when I got here and I got drafted, you know, Izzo told me, like, you're going to be with special teams.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's cool. You know what I'm saying? Anything the team needs, I got you. You know, so I'm going out there to make plays for myself and for this team. So, it's like, it's cool with me. I did it before. I could do it on a bigger stage.
Can you believe that Larry was a linebacker in the NFL?
No, I can't.
And he was like a Pro Bowl special team player, too.
And, you know, it's crazy, but his energy level and his competitiveness, I can believe it. Yeah. But just looking at him, I would have never known that.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, could you slide down inside, you think, and play like a nickel corner, you think? I mean, have you
100%,
because
I did that in college. Obviously, you know, you got way bigger guys in the NFL. You got the Trent Williams in the league and stuff. But, like, I mean, they're just, like you said, just learning how to move around those guys now. I played in the box. I had over 100 tackles. I had 100 tackles 2 years in a row. I think like 87 one year and like 95 the next year. So it's like, I mean, I played in the box. I know how to tackle. I'm a tackler. So, I mean, it's just doing it on a bigger stage now.
Yeah. So you're talking to KJ. You got Bobby out there. Two of the best dudes ever in NFL history. I mean, there's a lot to take advantage of, and, you know, and Pete and his whole thing. Like, I think a lot of times people see Pete and they think, oh, this can't be for real. It is, man. I mean, it's incredibly special place. What have you noticed about Pete and the coaching staff and things like that?
Their energy level is, like, unmatched. You know, every time we step foot in the team meeting room, it's just to start the day off. Hoorah, and, you know, Coach Pete, he got his music going. He's getting all hammered and loud and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that transitions from the team meeting room to opposition rooms all the way on the field and throughout practice. It's just the energy level. It just makes you want to compete every single day. It's never a drag. It's never like a sink in energy. Is always on 10 throughout the whole entire day, and that comes from Coach Carroll all the way down to the assistant coaches.
Yeah. Well, Jarek, we'd love to have you on for another hour.
But,
man, we're just so excited to have you here and watch your progress, and you're a great story, man, and so good luck to you.
Appreciate you guys, and thank you again for having me on the show.
Yeah, all thanks, right. Jarek. Appreciate it, man.
There we go. Thanks. What a nice young man, nice off the field, nasty on the field. Thanks, Jarek. All right, coming up next, what do we got, Mike?
We're going to talk about some things in the Mariners lineup. So, yeah, we'll come back. We'll switch gears here. We'll be back on Seattle Sports on 710 and Seattle Sports App.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports App.
Welcome back to Wyman and Bob. Mike Lefko sitting in today. We're out at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, and that's why we were able to talk to Jarek Reed. I'm going to have a hard time with that. People keep saying, I think it sounds like Jaron Reed.
Yeah, at the end, too, I said Jarek. I was like, oh, that sounded too much like Jaron. I need to enunciate more, but they're very similar names.
I love getting the young kids in here. And just because I remember at that point, you know, how – and he has the perfect mentality. First of all,
yeah,
he's nasty on the field, nice guy off. But then, you know, just sort of – he's got such great mentors. And I think that players are so much better about, like, reaching out to each other. And, of course, we didn't have cell phones back then, Mike. So it's not like – I mean, if you wanted to call somebody – if I wanted to call my mentor, Keith Butler, it would be on a hard line, you know, to Tennessee. I don't even know. Memphis is where he lived. And, you know, it's just not like we only talked and shared information and stuff when we were together at practice.
Well, and Dave, the kids these days, you don't even need to know their number. You can just send them a DM on all the InstaFace platforms. No, I know what they're called.
You're just trying
going to the theme of this show. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just playing along with the theme of this show. But it is easier, so it does help a lot in that, in terms of connecting with people that you might not have a guy's number, but you can just send them a direct message on Instagram or, you know, on Twitter. Probably Instagram with these guys. But you send them one, like, hey, want to meet up? And then something like that, where Jarek Reed said KJ reached out to him. So it is easier to get in touch these days, and it's good that the veterans and the older guys are taking those steps to bring the young guys into the fold.
Well, and that's kind of what Pete, he creates that atmosphere. But, I mean, can you imagine having, you know, you're sitting there with KJ Wright, one of the best dudes ever. He was a man of the year. I think he won the Steve Largent Award, things like that, multiple times. And then, you know, all of a sudden Cam Chancellor comes walking in. And then you got Bobby Wagner out there. So, yeah, really good for these young guys. So.
Well, I liked hearing, too, that Quandre reached out to him right away.
Yeah.
Because that's a guy, at least position-wise, that you need to kind of have as a mentor. It's great that former Seahawks have reached out and have mentored these young guys. But if you're a rookie coming in and you're stepping into that secondary group, especially as a safety, well, it helps when one of the more veteran leaders of that group reaches out to you. So the fact that Quandre did that, and what Reed said about Jamal Adams, he gave a speech to the guys. He talked to them when he got here a few days ago. So it sounds like these veterans are ready to welcome the young guys in and help out as they progress in their careers.
That's another angry guy, Quandre. Who?
They're all angry, right? Yeah. You need that.
Yeah, you got. I don't know. KJ is never angry. I never saw KJ getting like a fight or anything. I don't think Bobby either. But I don't know. It just seems like Quandre is like a grumpy old man. He fits the theme of the
show.
Remember,
he said his personality fits the Seattle weather.
Yeah, gloomy.
Yes.
All right.
We should have him on the show. Guest segment. What's bugging Quandre?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I think that would appeal to him. We could have him on weekly to complain about things.
He just pops on, calls up. All right, this is bugging me. I'm done.
I like when Snacks Harrison was here, and he said he called Quandre, and Quandre answered the phone very aggressively. And I'm imagining that it was, "What the bleep do you want?" I love that about Quandre. So Mariners, Mike. They need multiple things to happen, do you think, in order to make – I mean, how many things have to happen? You know, we talked earlier about Jared Kelnick. I mean, I just thought he was such a key. But, you know, if you're not getting the slugging percentage from Teo or Gino, or you're not getting you're just not getting timely hits, is that enough? I mean, those are two guys. Julio looks like he's going to be Julio. Ty France is Ty France. But – you know, what else needs to happen to kind of, you know, give them a push this year to get back to, you know, that streak that they were on last year?
Yeah, because we all point to, well, they need a bat, right? They need to improve this lineup. They need more depth. They need a bat. You do need that. You also need the guys who you expected to be the key sources of power and run production to pick it up, because right now they're slumping. And that's where the lack of offense is occurring, because you might have a guy, and we broke it down about Jared Kelnick and J.P. Crawford. They've gotten on base well. Kelnick is performing above expectations. J.P. Crawford gets on base at a terrific rate. That's why he's been a great boost to the leadoff spot. But if they're getting on and they're just sitting there,
right,
or Ty France, who's batting high in the lineup, he's a hits guy. He's not necessarily a power bring you in guy. Ty France, he hits, and he hits really well. He puts together long hit streaks. He puts together a nice stretch of multi-hit games. But you need your big bats. You need Teoscar Hernandez and Eugenio Suarez, who came in with the accolades of, this is the power. These are the slugging pop that you need, and you take the strikeouts with it. And as Shannon Dreher says here in Cut 2, that you can take that, you need that from Teo and Gino, but you're not getting what you expected out of them.
You can live with the strikeouts if you also have the slugging percentage. And the problem is with Teoscar Hernandez, with Eugenio Suarez, you don't have the slug. You just have the strikeouts. I mean, if you look at those numbers, Aaron Judge is among the top strikeout, has one of the highest strikeout percentages in the game. Julio Rodriguez and Mike Trout have the same strikeout percentage, and it's high. There is a trade-off there, but the problem is you've got empty strikeouts in two huge parts of the lineup.
Yeah, you know, you're not supposed to do back-to-back clips, Mike, but before we get to break, let's hear also from Jason Churchill, because, you know, what Shannon brings up there is definitely something that, you know, that we're getting
a weekly delivery
of Fresca. Tell Dave that he is mean making you do that, okay? He's mean. Dave Pearson, I texted him as a joke. He's a vice president here. He's been here for 35 years. I said, as a joke, I texted him. I said, we got enough Fresca down here.
And yeah, like, he just throws it in your face.
And so then he has his assistant bring him down. And so now I feel bad because she had to bring down.
You just got four of them for the people who can't see. You have four delivered to you right now.
Yeah, well, you can have some, Mike. Okay. Real quick, Jason Churchill, cut number three.
But those two guys are the key to the rest of the Mariners season. It's not Julio. It's not Jared Kelnick. It's not the pitching staff. It's not a trade. You cannot fix this team with trades this season. Eugenio Suarez and Teoscar Hernandez have to do better. They have to be better. They have to be much closer to what they were a year ago from here on out for this offense to turn around and for the Mariners season to be meaningful. Those two guys are the key to it all.
How about that? That's really interesting, you know, that it would come down to Teo and Gino. And, you know, Gino was just a surprise last year. And then you came to expect things from him. He does strike out a lot. But who cares if you're, you know, getting, what do you have, 100 RBIs last year?
Yeah, 87 RBI, 31 home runs. So that's, you might not have expected it last year. You expect it now.
Yeah.
And so for better or worse, he has to provide that or else this offense isn't going to come close to what it needs to be.
All right, well, coming up next, we're going to circle back to the Seahawks and the mini camp. We're going to talk to Seahawks.com reporter John Boyle. That's next on Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and SeattleSports.com.